This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And I want to get around to a subject that I've been meaning to talk about for a long time, and that is the subject of pain. And why are we talking about pain? Well, because we're in the midst of an unprecedented opiate addiction problem in this country. It is something that in some ways harkens back to the 1960s and 1970s. There was a movie with Al Pacino, one of his first roles, Panic in Needle Park, and it dramatized what was thought to be then a very unusual situation, which is the migration of addiction, drug addiction, to the middle class. And Al Pacino and his co-star, I forget who his girlfriend was, played some middle-class white kids who ended up hooked on heroin and living in a place called Needle Park, which, by the way, these days is a pretty expensive piece of real estate. It used to be a kind of dangerous, rundown piece of New York about 50 years ago, but now is very fancy and opposite Lincoln Center. Interesting enough, times have changed. Well, what goes around comes around. We thought that we've combated the epidemic of heroin addiction to some extent. Certainly, the war in Vietnam contributed to addiction. A lot of soldiers came back addicted, but it seemed like we were turning that epidemic around until recently, when we see an uptick in heroin deaths. And disturbingly, this is not just a phenomenon in the inner city that is confined to impoverished minority populations. It's hitting middle America, and Ohio seems to be ground zero for this phenomenon, where literally they're running out of places to store bodies in freezers from people who are ODing. And so there's a multiplicity of factors that seems to be contributing to this perfect storm. And we're finally coming to the realization that we're in serious trouble here. And so, you know, what are some of the factors that are involved? Well, part of the problem is that we have an effort that is partially underwritten by drug companies to change the way that we look at pain. And there was a sort of a sea change in that, you know, literally during my medical career. It used to be that we would withhold pain medication from people, perhaps unmercifully, because some people really deserve high-potency pain medication. But we were very, very stingy about dishing out pain medication. And so in what seemed to be a well-meaning effort, pharmaceutical companies got together with doctors to change the climate for prescribing pain medications. So there's a nice article in a recent edition in June in the Atlantic magazine, "Are Pharmaceutical Companies to Blame for the Opioid Epidemic?" And the net result is that in a way similar to the way that they sued Big Tobacco in the 1980s and 1990s, they're now levying big fines against pharmaceutical companies for promoting, in effect, pain medication, for underwriting campaigns to encourage doctors to be more liberal about prescribing. And so, you know, just to give you an idea of the scope of the problem, in Ohio, there were 793 million doses of opioids prescribed in the state, enough to supply every man, woman, and child with 68 pills each. Roughly 20% of the state's population was prescribed an opioid in 2016, and Ohio leads the nation in overdose deaths. I mean, this is, we're not talking New York, we're not talking Baltimore, we're not talking, you know, inner cities. You know, we're talking about often suburban and rural Ohio. So what has happened is that there was a change in the climate for prescribing these powerful medications, and ever more or more potent medications got introduced. Medications like fentanyl, and which is available as a patch, as a pain patch. But when addicts use it, they sometimes you know, take it, grind it up, snort it. It can be, it can certainly be abused. Oxycodone, Vicodin, and so on. These are long-acting medications. In the early 1990s, an outfit called the American Pain Society opined that there was a national epidemic of untreated pain in our nation's hospitals and announced that pain should be classified as the fifth vital sign. Okay, that's kind of a catchy thing, because when we take vital signs, you know, it's a heart rate, breathing rate, you know, and temperature, and so on, blood pressure. These indicate the state of a patient's essential body functions. So to take pain and to put it in the category of a vital sign seems very progressive, but actually pain is not quite as objective as a blood pressure, or as a temperature, or as a pulse rate. It's a subjective experience. And so the result of equating pain as a vital sign, medical practitioners had to come up with some treatment. You know, it's an objective fact. They're trying to say, this is real. This is not just an imagined thing by patients. And therefore, it must be treated just as critically as a rapid heart rate or elevated blood pressure and so on. So that it sort of changed the way that they look at things. You know, you don't, for example, say to a doctor, look, I'm telling you, my blood pressure is too high. Could you give me something for it? Or my heart rate is going too fast. The doctor has an objective way of, you know, you could say, I think it is. The doctor can check and objectively ascertain whether it's true. With pain, well, you know, cynically speaking, some people may be faking it, but other people may be more susceptible to the effects of what another person might be tolerable or minor pain. So this meme, pain is a vital sign, became part of a national campaign. And American hospitals and medical professionals were steered to overtreat acute and chronic pain. And this is with the complicity of many drug companies and manufacturers of these powerful opioid drugs, morphine-like medications. And the net result is that there's been a flooding of the marketplace in terms of these medications. So, you know, this is really a bit of a problem. It's a huge problem because pain, it turns out, is the most common reason for seeking health care. Did you realize that? for doctor's visits overall. Pain exceeds diabetes, heart disease, and cancer combined as a reason for seeking health care. And it turns out that when doctors prescribe medications, they often prescribe too much. It is now suggested, according to more stringent guidelines, that for acute pain, say the pain of tooth removal or an operation, that you can prescribe pain medication, but for less than or equal to 3 days' worth, and rarely 7 days or more of pain medication. Doctors overprescribe opiates for acute pain all the time. And it turns out that, here's a statistic, 72% of people prescribed opiates for acute pain have leftover medication. And I'm a case in point. When I broke my leg, I got pain medication because the pain was excruciating. And that was 10 years ago. And recently, I'm sort of cleaning out my medicine cabinet, and I see some medication. It's 10 years old now. It's expired, and it's sitting there, and it's powerful medication. And I don't want to throw it into the trash because I'm afraid somebody's going to fish it out and use it or sell it. The proper way of disposing it is to take it back to a pharmacy that will they have programs whereby they take expired medication. Not a good idea to flush medication down the toilet, because goodness knows we're putting so much medication into our environment that we're actually causing problems in our wildlife, especially with hormonal medication. You flush your birth control pills or your hormone replacement therapy down the toilet, and you're creating a more estrogenic environment. Certainly, you don't want to put pain medication into the water supply. As much as it's purified, who knows, what residues of that in our water supply that's often recycled will do. So in terms of, here's some grim statistics. First of all, that when it comes to long-term pain, and that's the big problem, because, short-term pain, I get it, you need pain medication. It's pretty uncontroversial, for short-term pain. The only problem with short-term pain is that doctors overprescribe long-term agents for short-term. Say you get a back problem, one of the worst possible options in terms of back pain is to prescribe an opioid pain medication. That is an accident waiting to happen, because we know that some people will get relief and tolerate it, but we know that genetically speaking, there are some people who are highly prone to addiction. And one of the things that a doctor should be asking when they prescribe these pain medications is, do you have a family history of addiction, whether it's alcohol addiction or whether it's drug addiction? This could be predictive of your risk for, in a very short time, becoming addicted to pain medication. It's happened to a lot of celebrities. It actually happened to Rush Limbaugh, who had, I think he had back surgery or something, and ended up highly addicted to pain medication, which the net result of that was that it actually destroyed his hearing. There's evidence that there's all kinds of, in addition to addiction, there's all kinds of harmful effects of chronic use of these pain medications, higher risk of falls and fractures, particularly among the elderly. That's a big thing. Certainly, there's a higher risk of cardiac problems in relation to pain medications, whether non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like Advil or Celebrex, prescription and non-prescription, or the strong prescription kind actually may have cardiovascular side effects. Also, interestingly, I just read that if you take pain medication chronically, opioid medication, it can decrease your estrogen and, importantly, decrease testosterone in men, resulting in erectile dysfunction. I mean, if you're like knocked out with pain medication, you don't feel too sexy anyway. So clearly, there's a lot of problems. when it comes to evidence for the effectiveness of these medications, so if somebody has, say, long-term chronic pain, they have a back problem that is a nagging chronic back problem, or any type of pain. Maybe they've had an ankle injury that's just chronic, it's sore, it hurts all the time. Any number of conditions can result in chronic pain. Fibromyalgia, for example, chronic, that's a form of chronic pain. But according to the studies, and I'm quoting here, there's little evidence to support the assertion that long-term use of opioids, this is morphine-like drugs, many of them now synthetic and powerful, provide clinically significant pain relief or improve quality of life or functioning. What they simply do is, well, they seem to work at first, but then you develop a tolerance and you require higher and higher doses just to feel normal. And when it comes to quality of life, your quality of life suffers because of the sedation and mental compromise that these drugs cause. And they, what is a concern too is that we have an increasing problem in this country of, we can call it demoralization. And this is actually tied up with the politics of this country, is that there are a lot of people who feel sidelined. There are a lot of people who feel marginalized. They can't get work. Many of them are former blue-collar workers. Some are minorities, but many are white. And they're angry. They're displaced. They're hopeless, and many of them are addicted, and many of them are extremely depressed and even suicidal. This is a phenomenon that has been documented in sociological studies. And part of the problem is that a high percentage of these alienated, marginalized individuals are on disability. And one of the problems with disability is that disability has been proven to increase the likelihood that you will become addicted. And the reason being is that there's secondary gain to being disabled. I mean, I'm not blaming people who are disabled, but when you're disabled, there seems to be an incentive to stay sick. Because if you're well, your money gets cut off and you're required to get a job and you don't feel that great anyway. I mean, these people have real problems. And so there's a tendency to go to more doctors, to get more medication, often medication that creates a dependency. And it's a vicious cycle of illness behavior, depression, and sometimes culminating in suicide. The suicide rates in among populations that are on these medications are extremely high. But in terms of some statistics that I'll share with you, when patients get pain medication, 39% of patients increase their dose without direction from a healthcare provider. In other words, if a little is good, more is better. They end up taking more medication than they were told to take. 39%. 26% engaged in what is called purposeful over-sedation. That's a little bit like saying, hey, I feel pretty lousy, and I'm just going to knock myself out. That's fully a quarter of the population giving these medications. And, for some, it's just a desire to get high. But for others, it's just a desire to be put out of their misery. And I think, one comment on that is that I think our society is very oriented to looking for quick fixes for pain, whether it's psychic pain or whether it's physical pain. And in the realm of psychiatry and even mild, mental discomfort, grief, stress, we're always looking for something to quell the pain. And the pain might be a signal that something's not going right in your life and you need to make adjustments, and the pain can be an impetus to change, but we're always looking for a way to quell the pain. And similarly, when it comes to physical pain, we have zero tolerance for physical pain. It's a cultural thing. It's a generational thing. It's a modern thing because we're always looking for panaceas. But unfortunately, the very panaceas that we seek tend to make us dependent and ultimately don't address the underlying cause of the pain. In terms of additional statistics, 20% of individuals receiving prescriptions for pain medications drank with their opioid pain medication. That's strictly contraindicated. And it's interesting because at the time that I broke my hip about 10 years ago, I was in 2006. It seems like time flies, but it's been over 10 years ago. I was given a pain medication, Percocet, which is a, you know, a pain medication with some Tylenol. And because of the Tylenol and because of the pain medication, and I, at that time I was a sort of habitual cocktail drinker. I would have a cocktail, you know, virtually every night or a glass of wine with a meal. For 6 months that I intermittently took some Tylenol for my pain because I had quite a lot of pain, I did not take any alcohol whatsoever. And I was amazed. I thought, gee, you know, I didn't know I could do it, you know, survive without a drink here and there. But I scrupulously avoided it. People would say, have a glass of wine. No, I, you know, I'm going to avoid it because I recently took some Tylenol. Tylenol affects the liver. You're really not supposed to be drinking alcohol when you take Tylenol. It's certainly not when you take opioid pain medication because of the it really can cause you to get disoriented and from the, especially with elderly individuals, they can have some very serious complications. They can fall. They can have cardiac problems. That's a no-go. But 20% drank alcohol with their opioids. 18% used opioids for other than pain relief. What's that about? Oh, recreationally, I guess, right? Just like, I've got them. I'm not in pain, but I'm having a bad day. Let me just take, I got, you know, doctor overprescribed. I've got, remember, 72% of people prescribed opiates for acute pain have leftover medication. Oh, I got it from my cousin Paul. He broke his leg and, you know, he didn't need the medication, but he said, hey, I'm getting rid of this anyway. You want some of this because it's, you know, you feel pretty good when you take it and maybe it'll help you sleep. You know, you seem to be under a lot of stress. Yeah, okay, great. They're 18%. Used opioids for other than pain relief. 12% hoarded their pain meds. In other words, got that prescription and they said, well, I don't, you know, doc, give me some pain meds. Sure. Well, I only took two and I'm going to keep the rest of them in reserve for when I might need them. And or maybe I could share them. Somebody in my family might need them. You know, it's good to have them because they're hard to get. You know, these days they're cracking down on prescriptions. 8% obtained extra opioids from other doctors. That's called doctor shopping. That's a big deal. And they're trying to set up electronic medical records to make sure that doctor shopping isn't that easy. Because with paper records, it used to be easy to, you know, you go to one doctor, you go to another, and you go to another. And, of course, the, you know, another problem is that doctors are either too lax about this or some of them are out-and-out crooks. And they literally sell prescriptions. They don't examine the patients. They don't follow guidelines. There was a case of an orthopedic surgeon recently, a very prominent one, in and I believe it was in the state of Ohio where there's a big problem. Was it Ohio? It was with some Midwestern state who recently was busted because he was sleeping with a woman who he was prescribing pain medications for. He says compassionately because she unfortunately was addicted and he was trying to, quote, help her out. But she wasn't a patient and he was prescribing meds for her and he was having sex with her. And this guy is in a heap of trouble, you know, likely to lose his medical license, a very prominent orthopedic surgeon. Others have been busted for, you know, they're some of them elderly doctors who don't really practice medicine anymore, except they sell prescriptions to sort of the doctors at the fringes of medical practice who are, you know, have lost all sense of ethics and literally sell prescriptions, and many of them are getting busted. They're being rounded up and being defrocked. All right, so you know, I'm trying to give you a lay of the land on this issue, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the natural options that are available and why not employ them, and why even the government, the Veterans Administration, the powers that be are suddenly interested in natural alternatives, because what they see is a terrible epidemic of opioid dependency and opioid overprescribing. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be right back with more of this special focus on pain here on Intelligent Medicine.